right, welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And yes, we're back. We did come back from the holiday break.
We did.
Yep. It's the midweek show of the Fiber Talk podcast for people who play with needles and other things. And boy, that was a long time to be not podcasting. It's unusual.
I know. It is very unusual for us because we've been doing this for a really long time.
Yes.
And there were many days where I woke up or I got to the evening and had that, am I supposed to be doing something tonight? I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah, it was weird. Yeah, it was weird. I put the headphones and microphone away and yeah, I forgot. So that was really strange. Yep. So, yep, we're back. And yeah, we're like bad pennies. We just keep showing up. So. and during the holiday, now we had, of course, I still had to do a little work, try to take a little time off from the paying job, but it didn't work so well this year. But I had three different days where I was able to get up in the morning, have breakfast, and nothing lie ahead.
That is nice.
So it was stitch or nap or eat.
Oh, well. Did you balance those three things or did you do them all at the same time? Well, I guess you can't stitch a nap at the same time.
And yeah, no, I balanced them quite nicely. I'm quite proud of myself. Yes. 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 It was very nice. Yes.
Okay. So here's my question then. What TV did you catch up on?
Well,
must have binge watched something.
Oh yeah. Oh, I did. I had all the regular TV shows that I had to get caught up on that, the violent ones that Margo doesn't like to watch. So they get stored
I was going to say, what constitutes a violent one?
Anything with a gun.
Yeah. Oh, anything with a gun.
Anything with a gun.
So it's everything.
Pretty much. Well, her favorite TV is HGTV and Food Network and Mary Tyler Moore and
like Fixer Uppers and
all that. Yeah.
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 And then we have some regular shows we watch, but most of them, no. So I got all caught up on all but one.
Very violent TV.
Yes. Yes. and then it's so funny. She, Frankie and what is it? I hate that. I can't remember. Anyway, there's a show on Netflix, Frankie and somebody.
Frankie and Gracie?
Yeah, Grace and Frankie. It? Yes, yes.
Grace, yeah.
Yeah, with Lily Tomlin and Jane, Jane, what's her name? And it's very good show, very entertaining. But Marga did not understand the concept of a whole season on Netflix. So we watched and then we finished up what was there. This was, I don't know, a couple of years ago. And then they were over and then it was a year before they came back with the most recent season. And so she just sat down and it was like night after night, just pounded through them. Well, and it was like 8 or 10 or so. And then it was over. And she looked at me like, wait a minute.
But now what do we do?
Yeah, she just realized she just burnt through them all, and now what? So
yeah,
yep. So this time it was The Crown.
Oh, The Crown is excellent.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah,
there's no guns in that.
No, but so we watched that. That's a Stitch and Watch show for me. But she likes to just sit there and get immersed in it.
Agreed. Yeah. It is definitely a Stitch and Watch. Although I have to say, the one thing that's really fun with that is the costume design. And so if you have any kind of desire, or if you watch costume design from a symbolism perspective, that's a really interesting show to watch because, you know, there's the military uniforms and things like that. But if you watch Queen Elizabeth, watch the colors she wears and the styles of clothing she wears in different scenes. And you can tell by what she's wearing at the beginning of the scene, what's going to happen. It's a really fun show to do that with because good costume designers will often do that with, you know, certain things have themes. Mad Men was a great show for that, where if you watch Mad Men, and there's really good analysis online of this, where, a certain character, if she was wearing roses, a dress with a floral, a rose pattern, you knew it was going to be a romantic heartbreak and every time. And it was just that theme. So you can watch these beautiful themes develop through what people are wearing. It's a really cool kind of way to watch television and really appreciate what a good costume designer is doing, because it's not only getting the period right and getting the clothing to fit the person and to be accurate, but it's also telling a story itself. And how does it play with the scenery and the set? How does it play with the other colors of the people? Like, is the so for example, if a woman and a man are having a conversation, is the color of the dress that the woman's wearing reflected in the tie of the man? And is that indicative of something? Of is it showing, is it a symbol of a relationship between them, or are they clashing? And does that tell you something? So the crown is fun for that. So if you're so
I did not know these things.
yes, that is a really good one. The Mad Men is excellent for that. The Crown is pretty good too. That's really fun. That's a fun one to watch.
Okay, now I have to. All right, now, all right. See, I did not know this stuff went on. I just, that's just clothes they wear. So, because
Yep, no, there's
we started another series, The Fabulous Mrs. Maisel, I think it is.
yes.
Which is a upper crust woman whose husband leaves her very Jewish family, like in the 50s, and she's very attractive and of course well dressed and everything, and she goes to be a she is a stand-up comedian, and I mean I just don't pay attention to the clothes that people wear, but her wardrobe is stunning. I mean, you can tell it
And that's
is.
also, yeah, that's a pleasure to watch too.
Because and it's because Marga, I commented to Marga, I said that clothing looks extremely expensive, and she says, "Oh yeah, you can tell." But see, she's doing these stand-up routines in these seedy nightclubs, and so she stands out like a beacon with these clothes, so now okay, now I got to look at it in a different light, because I was just amazed at how beautiful the clothes were. And how well tailored and everything. But now I have to look at it in a different light. I didn't know this went on. I just thought people wore clothes.
So, okay, so one of the websites, there's these two men that actually so going back, this is going back many years. Do you remember the show Project Runway? Because now we're not talking about stitching at all, but we're talking about the things you watch. So
I
we
know of
went
that
to
show. What's his name?
Tim Gunn.
Yeah,
So
Tim Gunn.
Project Runway was like the it was sort of like a competition reality show, but it was all clothing designers. And so they would get on and they would do clothing design. So there was these two men who started a website doing basically like a TV, and they did it kind of as a goof, of they were doing sort of a recaps of the show of each of the designers and what they had designed, whether they liked them or not. And then these two men sort of branched out and they started doing sort of commentary on television and things like that. And they got so good and they got such a following that they both quit their day jobs and this is all they do now. So their website is just tomandlorenzo.com, and all they do, they'll do fashion posts and things like that. So again, from as a clothing stitcher, for me, that's what the draw was, watching the show and watching how they construct clothing and what their inspiration is and how they build things, and then watching these two men sort of rip them apart. But then that's when I started watching. They would watch Mad Men and they would dissect the costume design, and it was completely fascinating. And that's how I started sort of paying attention to those things. So they, over the years, and we're going back well over 10 years now, have done that with several shows. And sometimes they'll go through a show and say, yeah, you know what, this isn't so good, so we're not going to do it anymore. But other shows like Mad Men, they did every season almost scene by scene, going through and looking at different, okay, this character is wearing this and what does it mean? And what is the style? If they're dressing a woman in a very juvenile way, what does that tell you about what she's feeling at that time? And you start really paying attention to movies and television differently. And it almost makes you, like in a professional setting, think about what you're wearing, because you start thinking about what is it that I'm projecting So even if the person isn't conscious of it, through what I'm wearing myself, right? So it's really kind of cool. So the website is tomandlorenzo.com. And they've actually gotten pretty famous for internet people. You know, they go to Fashion Week in New York and people know who they are, and they're really brilliant and very, very funny. So if you want a good laugh, go check it out. But they're also extraordinarily smart. So I would highly recommend it. I've gotten so much pleasure from reading the two of them over so many years. It's one of those things I really owe them a debt of gratitude, because I've learned a ton and just so much fun. So Tom and Lorenzo.
Okay. I'm going to have to check it out then.
I'll give you two more shows that are non-gun related stitching shows. Are you ready?
Okay.
Number one, Planet Earth. So you and I talked about this many years ago. The new Planet Earth is out, narrated by David Attenborough. It's on Netflix. It's Planet Earth 2. And I just watched with my son yesterday two episodes, the island and the mountain episodes. And they, since the first Planet Earth, so Planet Earth basically like an old fashioned nature show, like Wild America. And so the first Planet Earth was groundbreaking. And since then, they've now done this again, and the camera technology has advanced so much that a lot of the footage is either aerial or it's cameras that they've hidden in, you know, or disguised as, you know, natural elements. And they just leave them as motion sensor, motion triggered cameras. And the footage that they are able to get is unbelievable. So that's when you may actually have to watch.
Yeah.
You may actually, because I started stitching and I put my stitching down because you really needed to watch. But it's funny and it's brilliantly shot. It's definitely good. So the opposite of that will be on Amazon, the new season of The Grand Tour is out.
And those guys, they ain't hooked up right.
Yes, they did. So The Grand Tour is Jeremy Clarkson, Richard Hammond, and James May, who used to be on Top Gear, which was a show on BBC for many years, and it's a car show. And they basically get crazy, expensive, cool cars and drive them around, and they're funny, and you know, they do goofy things, but you also see these ridiculous cars that none of us will ever be in, or most of us won't be in. And so they now have their new show on Amazon, and last season was a little rocky. They got off to a little bit of a shaky start, but this season has been really funny. Again, the production value on it is great, and it's a good stitching show because it's a little bit of cars and it's a lot of talking. So it's, you know, 30 seconds of glamour shots of cars and racing that you look up for, and the rest of it you are stitching. So it's, you know, that it's a good balance of need to look at and don't need to look at. Yeah. So that's a really good one. So
yeah, they're nuts. Those three guys, they're just not, they're nuts. They're just nuts.
Hilarious. but also very knowledgeable.
Yes.
So, and the cars that they're driving are, you know, they're kind of a you know, in one, there was, you know, they'll drive anywhere from a McLaren down to, you know, a 1976 Saab that they turn into a fire engine for $1,200. So, you know, you never know what you're going to get, but it so far the season's been really pretty funny. So anyway, those have been my
stitching. I'll have to try. I quit watching them when they were shut down and before they went to Amazon, and but Kevin and I watched them religiously, and Kevin is just a fanatic about them. And I've gotten many a laugh out of those three Yahoos. They really
start with the second season because it's pretty darn funny, and I think they've kind of hit their stride here. So I think you'll enjoy it quite a bit.
Okay, all right. Well, I do want to mention, since we were talking about clothes, and we will get to the needlework in a minute, but you have gotten me hooked on Isabella Pitcher Prior Attire. You followed her on our Instagram account, and who she makes Victorian, you know, ancient clothing, researches it and makes it. What a fascinating world that is. that all the things, the clothing that she makes, men and women, and all the research, and the pieces and parts that go with all those huge, huge dresses and stuff. Jeez, that's amazing. And yeah, she apparently stays quite busy making clothes for people who want to dress in the attire of the Georgian period or whatever it might have been. Mm-hmm. But yeah, prior attire. That's a fascinating Instagram. I always look forward to a new post from her because and what a talented seamstress too. Wow.
Yeah. There's a couple. There's a few. She's pretty good. There's a couple of other designers now. Not so much like couture designers like you would see on runways, but other just good stitching people, good clothing designers. And they're fun to watch because it's sort of where tailoring and clothing meets art. And that sort of interface where it's something maybe that you wouldn't buy to wear, but you could see somebody wearing it in an event because it's a little almost costumey, but not really. But you get to actually see the art of something. So, those are really neat. And there's just so much texture and sculptural elements and things. It's good. It's good inspiration for different types of things. And so it's back into costume sewing season for me for school plays. So, you know, I'm paying a little bit more attention to that and sort of gearing up towards, my own, what we call the sweatshop, which is my living room when my sewing machine comes out and I start sewing 7,000 middle school, costumes, which, you know, yay. You can tell how excited I am about that.
I can tell.
Well, this show is going to be a lot easier. Than the last one I did. So I'm happy about that.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Yep. So, were there any needlework-oriented Christmas gifts in your end?
Yes. Let's see. Books, right? So we were going to talk about books, and that's the bigger one. Well, my son bought me a big giant wicker basket to put all my stuff in next to the couch.
Here, Mom, clean up your mess.
Yeah. He may have had a hint from me that this was a good idea, but yeah, this way. And he bought a little box to put in it. So there's a little box for all the little findings and notions and things. And then the bigger box for the piece that I'm working on, or seven pieces as the case may be. So that's nice. I have a place to put my things now. But books. So I have two books. One is a stitching book and one is not, but both were bought for the express purpose of stitching. So the first one is by Carol Andrews. It's a paperback and it is called Embroideries from an English Garden. And what it is, the subtitle, Projects and Techniques in Surface Embroidery. So there you go. That's pretty much what it is. It's all things that she, sort of pieces that she designed based on her own garden in England. So it's a winter garden, a summer, spring. And just uses that as a means for teaching surface embroidery techniques. So it's all long and short stitches and some padded stitches, pretty basic usual things, but a lot of needle painting, which is nice. And some books and some designs, it's here's the design and we're going to give you a pattern and you trace the pattern and you make it. And you can do that with this, but what you can also do is just kind of use it as a jumping off point. And I like that. And she does a lot of more complicated needle painting where instead of a leaf having two or three thread colors, it'll have six or seven because, well, if you think about it, you know, three colors, a leaf from the edge to the center to the vein, you can see how, you know, the edge might be light and then the center becomes darker. Okay, so that's one dimension. But what if the leaf is in sunlight and is at an angle? So now, if you think about it, you've got the change in color. That's just the color of the leaf itself, you know, from edge to center. But now you've got the reflection of light on the leaf. So now you've got all these different interplays. And that's one of the things I had talked about before was using photographs as reference material instead of just stitching, right? So this is a really good book where it shows sort of some of the ways you can go to do these things. And so I like that. And it gives very basic instructions. It doesn't give you a whole lot of it's not a step-by-step how-to. There's a lot of room for movement, but it gives you the basics of that and sort of jumping off points to be able to design your own things. So that's that one.
Who's the author? I didn't get that.
The author is Carol Andrews, and it's not a big book. It's 100 pages or so, you know, large format, traceable designs for the patterns. But then, like I said, you can just kind of use those as inspirations and start designing your own pieces. It's well photographed. It's a lot of diagrams, which is nice. So that's pretty good. And then the other one that I got, which was the reason that I was interested in this book, is the idea that, okay, again, it's with surface embroidery, with needlepoint, you know, if you're working from a charted design, you're making the charted design, and you're going to either make it in the colorway that was designated, or you're going to come up with your own colorway, but basically you're going to make that design. And a painted canvas, you have the canvas, which dictates the design, but you can instill sort of your own texture through choosing stitches. And I've been thinking a lot about that because I haven't done that yet. And I'm excited about it and also intimidated because it's that idea of I don't know what to choose.
Yeah.
So with surface embroidery, for me, the jumping point is, all right, I go from the stump work piece that I completed, which was a class piece, which is, this is the design, stitch it exactly as I tell you. And then once you kind of get the feel for the techniques, now you'll have a toolbox that you can use to make your own things. So the book that I had asked for is called Botanical Shakespeare. And what it is, so I'll give you the subtitle because that tells you better than I would, an illustrated compendium of all the fruits, flowers, herbs, trees, seeds, and grasses cited by the world's greatest playwright. And it's by Garrett Keeley, and it's beautifully illustrated, and it's got a foreword by Helen Mirren, which of course makes it fabulous.
Oh yeah, that puts it right over the top right there.
Yeah, pretty much right there. So yeah. So what it is it's basically a catalog of all of the different plants that have been mentioned in any of the plays and sonnets. And so I just, for example, opened up to a random page, and the page is marjoram, the herb. So it's got a beautiful illustration of what that herb looks like, and it's a hand-drawn thing, like a botanical illustration. And then it gives all the different quotes from all the different plays and sonnets that herb is mentioned.
Well, that's fun.
So, yeah, it really is. So what I liked about it was that, you know, so it gives each of these different plants context, because at the same time that Shakespeare was writing, English gardening was becoming a thing because people had some leisure time. And instead of using the land just for farmland, they were starting to use it for ornamental purposes. So there's a lot of books that were written around that time that started addressing the idea of, okay, you can landscape, right? That landscaping wasn't a thing before then. So right at the time where these plays, where Marlowe and Shakespeare were starting to write, gardening was becoming popular. So the idea that flowers and plants were used as symbols in plays was very prevalent at the time. So you've got all of these different beautiful illustrations, and then all of the places where in these, you know, 15 and 1600s plays, they were used as symbols for something or metaphors. So it's kind of neat from both of those perspectives. And I think this was jumped off really, I think what started this was the Jane Nicholas stump work book, which was some of the flowers in Shakespeare, and this is pretty much all of the flowers. So they're illustrated beautifully. To stitch these would take a lot of interpretation because they're painted, right? They're ink and watercolor painting. So this is where the challenge for me lies, is can I take something that is an illustration and turn it into a needlework piece?
Right.
So that to me is like, I wonder if I can do that. I don't know. I don't think I'm at the point of being able to turn a photograph or a flower into a needlework piece, but this is sort of the next step, is taking an illustration and turning it into a needlework piece. So the next page I happened to open up to was almond. So they have the nuts, they have the tree, and then the blossoms, which the illustration just by itself would just be a beautiful little piece to do. So there's just so many things that if I wanted to learn a new technique or just have a small piece to carry, that I could take or work into a larger design. And that's one of the things that's kind of interesting to me too, and kind of intimidating at the same place, is good design of all kinds, graphic design, needlework design, anything, art, you know, photographs, paintings. The challenge for me and what I'm trying to wrap my head around as a non-artist is composition. So how do you, if I'm going to do floral things, right? Even a flower arrangement, what flowers do you pick? Where do you put them? In what balance? You know, how do you make it pleasing to the eye? How do you combine things together? In a simpler way, you could think of it, if you were just making a bouquet of flowers, you're picking flowers. How do you know which ones to pick? And, you know, how do you combine them in a way that's going to be pleasing as opposed to just being a lump of textured thing? Or, you know, I don't know. I don't know how to do that. And
You end up at the FTD website looking at floral arrangements. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And we've talked to so many people that are good designers. And what have they all said? Well, I was a graphic designer. I went to art school. And I know, so I have a sister who's an artist, and I look at sort of the way that she sees things that's different than the way that I see things. And I envy that, because in her head, she can compose things in a way that when she does it, when she just lays things out, they look pretty, you know?
Right.
And I feel like I don't know that I have that skill, and maybe it's a trained thing. I'm sure that it's a little bit of both. There's some aptitude and sort of intuitiveness to it. And then there's some portion of it that can be learned. And I don't have either of those things. So perhaps I should take an art class is really what I guess I'm realizing.
Yeah.
But that's the next thing that in my gut is like, ooh, I don't know how to do that, is how do I design a piece, you know? And, you know, you had gone through that course that you on designing with needlepoint. And it's that same element of, ooh, I don't know what to do. And for me, it's both intimidating and half makes you feel like I don't know if I should even try because it could be terrible. And then there's a part of me that says, no, I want to try. And I really hope it isn't terrible. Or, you know, I could do the thing and just take an art class or, you know, get a book from the library about composition and how to balance things and maybe start from there. So anyway, these are basically, I'm adding tools to the toolbox. I'm adding bits of inspiration. You know, if I was a quilter, this would be my stash of fabrics that one day I would walk into the closet and look at the fabrics and say, that fabric is going to be the root of an entire quilt. And I'm going to pull the pink from that and make the border. And then I'm going to pull the red from the other portion of it and use that for something else. And so I'm trying to build tools that will enable me to be able to make things that are pleasing to the eye. And I have no idea how to do it. That's okay. You know, that will be something that hopefully will be figured out. And really it's just looking for me, it's spending a lot of time and looking at what things are pretty to me and figuring out what it is about them that makes them pretty. And then maybe talking to other people that actually know what they're talking about. And, you know, a lot of the people that we've talked to, you know, they say a lot of times, well, I just know in my head what it is. But a lot of that knowing comes from having done it, you know?
Yeah. So, see, I always believe that you can learn just about anything. But obviously people like Orna Willis and Debbie Rowley and, you know, those types,
yeah,
they have that extra element in them where they, right, yeah, like you say, they see things that you can't see that you have to learn by rote, or trial and error and, you know, grasp this and then build on that, where they can just pick up a bunch of stuff and see it come together. And
Yeah.
yeah, but and I always believe you can learn. Like I think anyone can learn how to design a charted needlepoint piece,
Yes.
but will it look as good as Debbie Rowley's Tropical Punch? No. But can you get
Right.
one? Can you get a geometric design together that will look pleasing? Yeah, I think you can.
I think so. I think so. I think it's also a little bit of both. There's definitely some people are going to be better at it than others. I think it's a couple of things. I think a little bit of it is just, do you have an aptitude or not? Because some people, so the analogy I have in my head is just music, right? Some people are just tone deaf. So you can give them an instrument, you can train them to play the instrument, but it's never going to be meaningful to them, or they're never going to have a feel for it. Whereas other people can pick up an instrument, and even before their hands catch up with the skill to play it, they have a feel for it and intuitiveness with that instrument. But even if you don't have that, you can learn to play the piano adequately. You can make your fingers do the job, and you can learn to play all the songs that somebody else has written. And eventually, if you play those songs long enough, you will learn just from exposure, okay, these chords go together really well. So if I had to throw something together, I could kind of throw those chords together and it would be something. But making the leap from knowing that if I just kind of do this to knowing that, to being able to just sit down at a piano and play a song from scratch that you've created yourself and none of the elements have been done before, that's that element. That's the gap that I would like to figure out how to do. And that's the most frightening and perhaps the most challenging part of that.
Yeah, see, that's that next level. 'Cause see, I always
Yeah.
think I think that needlepoint is one of, or needlepoint or needlework, it doesn't have to be needlepoint, but needlework in general is one of those things where you can learn to get to that next level by stitching and then doing variations of what someone else has designed. Because you can take a geometric piece and leave out some segments, or put in a different thread, or just use a different colorway, or say in this section here, I'm going to use these stitches instead of the ones that
Yes.
were designed. So you can start to learn what works and doesn't work in a given situation. And if you do enough of it and apply yourself, make a few notes, apply yourself, evaluate objectively what you've done afterwards, and say, nah, that really didn't work. I should have done this. I think you can start to see. Like you said, after you play the piano long enough, these three chords go together and played in succession create a sound that I enjoy. I think you can accomplish that same thing with needlework if you apply yourself. But
I think so,
yeah.
yeah.
But you got to
But
want to.
getting it though.
You can't just,
Yes.
yeah, there's a difference in just stitching for the enjoyment and then saying, no, I want to take something out of this more than the enjoyment. I want to be able to do something with it. Then yes, sit there with a notebook, make a few notes, try a couple of threads, and I think you can do it. And I think it lends itself well because if you don't like it, you can undo it
Right. And
easily.
I think that there's no, I think that you need, for me, I need both. I need some pieces that are going to be, I'm going to go way out on a limb and I have no idea if this is going to be okay. And then I need my making X's piece where I just need to stitch for a while. I need something that's on a piece of paper that I could just follow the directions. And you need kind of both things. But I think if you want to learn, it's all well and good to copy and do things and sort of branch out and make each thing a little bit different than the last one. But I think what would be even better to do and perhaps takes a little bit of courage to do is to then take the piece that you've done and take it to somebody that you respect and admire and say, tell me what you really think about this. What's good about it and what's not good? What would you have done differently? And so somebody that's a designer would say, okay, well, this piece, what you did here, these colors work really well together, but if you had the texture here is off, or the balance is off, or everything is the same color value where there's not enough contrast, you don't have enough, very darks and very light things, and you needed to kind of branch out a little bit more there, or you didn't use your canvas effectively. Everything is crowded into one corner and the rest of it's kind of blah. To be able to sit there and say, all right, really tell me what you really, really think, sometimes it's tough to hear, but that's probably the best way to learn faster, because you're letting somebody else point out the things that you didn't do well, so that the next time you can do them differently. Does that make sense?
Oh, very much so. I mean, that's something I would love to have, even if it's not something I design, is someone to give me constructive criticism, to sit down with a piece I've stitched and say, all right, here it would be better if you would do this little thing and that little thing. And here you did, you know, this is really nice. Yeah. And mm-hmm. be constructive, but take me through the piece and say, and point out all the areas, you know, a judge who would be constructive and say, these are the things I would mark you off for, and here's why, and here's how to not make that error.
Correct.
Or how to do it. Yeah. Because there's that part too. You know, mm-hmm. you did this wrong. I can see a thread running behind. But okay, then tell me how not to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's the class I would take. I've mentioned that before. Those little those little things that make all the difference. And mm-hmm. I would do that in a heartbeat.
Or simply a class, like you said, where you're just going to bring a bunch of pieces and to have an instructor, and you know, that talk about, you know, having guts. It's one thing to go to an instructor, you know, or somebody you know and say, hey, rip my piece apart. It's another thing to go into a class of 30 people and say, okay, I'm going to lay out all the pieces that I kind of want criticism on, and I'm going to let an instructor walk around the room and pick them up and say, all right, here's a piece that's, you know, was a great attempt, but wow, this didn't work. And let's talk about why and have it be your piece, you know. That would take a lot of guts, but what a great class that would be.
See, I do that in a heart. I do that in an absolute heartbeat. Yep.
Me too. Because you kind of have to put your ego aside, and because basically everybody in the room is doing the same thing. They're all putting all of their cards on the table, as it were, and saying, all right, I'm willing to show you my best and worst, or show you what I think is my best and have you maybe say it's the worst. But I know that I'm going to walk away being a better stitcher the next time.
Right.
So I think that'd be great fun to do. Oh,
yeah. I'd kill to sit in a class like that. And you know, I'd submit, you know, you can use all my pieces if you want, but I also would like, you know, somebody else's too. I, you know, sit there and, oh, I see what they did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Because other people are going to find different solutions to problems that you didn't think of. So not only are you going to see, you know, okay, well, Christine did this wrong, so I'm going to learn from her mistake, but you're also going to see, well, you know, Gary did this clever thing. I never thought of doing that way. So that's an interesting approach to the problem. So, yeah, I think that's great. I really like that idea. It's sort of like an unofficial judging.
Yeah. Oh, I'd do it in a heartbeat. Yep.
Yeah. We have to figure out how to make that happen, because that would be great fun to do. Because it's really not at all about, you know, learning, you know, taking a piece and everybody doing the piece. It's about taking work that's already done, just having a great conversation about what makes good art.
Right.
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 What makes good art and what makes skillful art.
Right.
Because those are not necessarily the same thing. You can have a very skillfully executed piece that's just really not very, you know, aesthetically pleasing.
Right. Doesn't have any passion in it. Yeah.
You can have an extraordinarily passionate piece that, wow, if that had been done a little neater, or, you know, if that person wasn't a novice and had stitched it again 10 years later, you know, the choice of threads that person would have had, you know, with 10 years experience would have made that piece sing.
Right.
That's the kind of thing would be a fun, I think that'd be a really fun conversation to have.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Those are classes I would attend.
Yeah.
A million of those. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe someday we'll find that.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to figure out. Yeah. We have to figure out a way to do that, because as a class offering, people are used to, it seems like the structure is, well, here's the piece that you want to stitch. So sign up for the piece you want to stitch, or sign up for the instructor you want. Very few of them. And there's a few open stitching classes that you can take at seminar and things like that. But to have a class, and a class in sort of air quotes, where the whole idea is to constructively shred each other's work, to be able to redesign it better. It's a difficult pitch, because the instructor, whoever's running the class, or hopefully multiple people running the class, aren't really bringing anything to the seminar runners to say, here, this is what we're going to do. It's a tough sell, I would imagine. But on the other hand, that just the description of it, again, I would sign up for that in a second. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, I'd do a 2-day class on that, you bet. I'd have a
Yeah.
notebook full. I mean, just
Maybe it would be it's a shop class, you know, maybe that's what that is supposed to be or would be good as. I don't know.
I would do it. You know, and you just gave me an idea. Now, next Wednesday, it won't be us. It'll be a video that I did with Mary McGuire, that we did her 10 favorite threads. So an hour and 20 minutes of Mary and I talking about threads in different projects. So that'll be the Wednesday show next week. But you just gave me an idea, and Mary doesn't listen, but she records, but she doesn't listen. I'll bet she'd do that for me.
Yeah, that would be fun.
I bet she'd do that. I'll talk to her. That might be fun to do, because I would love to hear her critiques of my work. Yeah. Okay. Lights are going off here. Flags are going up. I got it. That would be fun.
Yeah, this may be our way to, you know, because we're on YouTube now with FlossTube. Maybe this is our contribution to FlossTube is tell
Yes.
me all the things I did poorly.
Yes. Okay. All right. I just gave away the idea so somebody else will do it before I can get to it,
Ah, no, we can't do that. But we said it first.
we'll talk to Mary. All
But
right.
yeah, and I think lots of designers would be happy to tell us how we're not doing well.
Yeah. Well,
And I'm half
it's
poking fun, but
yeah. But I no, I would. I would like someone to say, well, you laid these threads nicely here, but your tension's not consistent. And
yes.
show me where it's not consistent. I'd like to see that.
Or before you even start stitching, so we're talking before about taking, you know, these botanical illustrations and making needlework. If someone like me or someone else were to draw out a design, okay, this is what I think I'm going to stitch. This is the outline. What do you think? And have somebody say, there's no balance here. There's no, you know, you have, like I said, you have too much. All the threads you've chosen are the same tone, so it's just not going to pop. Or, you know, everything is kind of weighted on one side and not the other, or it's too symmetrical, like, you know, that sort of thing. So before you even stitch, to have somebody, you know, swoop in, you know, like needlework Superman and say, before you stitch that, consider maybe changing this one thing and it'll probably come out better. That would be fun.
All
I
right.
like
Ideas are flying here. Yes.
that.
So I got two books for my kids.
Okay.
Kevin and Michelle, his wife Michelle, gave me, this is a dangerous book. Very, very dangerous book. It's either 50 or 100. I forget which it is, and I should have it in front of me, but that would require preparation. Bike rides that you should take before you die.
Okay.
And they're all over the world. And I got it. I opened it, and I did not know this book existed, or I would already have owned it. And I texted to my sister Nancy, who is my long distance touring partner, and said, I got this book. And this was a couple of days after Christmas in the evening. And she starts firing back, is there a trip here? Is there a trip here? So she's all lit up about it. So anyway, so I got that. So that's just fun. And we're hoping to do a long distance tour this summer. And I got a feeling one of the things in that book will be that one of the tours. So, and then the other one I got from Sarah, daughter Sarah and Chad, and well, actually from her grandsons officially, either way. Last year, I had put on my Amazon list for the family shopping the book from the Inspirations magazine people,
Yes,
A Passion for Needlework.
that was the one you immediately texted me a photo
Yes,
of.
yes. And I, when they went to, Kevin ordered it, and it was back ordered, and finally Amazon sent a thing and said, it ain't happening. So here's your money back. And I completely forgot about it. I was really disappointed because I really wanted the book. Completely forgot about it, and it was still on my list. Well, Sarah saw it on my list, and it's available now again. It's back in print because they just sold out so fast they couldn't keep up. So when I opened the package, that's what I got, was the
Oh, that's
Inspirations, A
great.
Passion for Needlepoint book. And boy, what, and it, if you read the Inspirations magazine, you know what the caliber of stuff that they do. And this is just one special book. I've just sat for several hours and just drooled. And it's all the photography is spot on, the all kinds of different stitching projects. And then in the back is a perforated black and white thing, so you can trace all the
Oh, that's
patterns.
nice.
Yeah, I just pull it
Yeah.
out, and there's some stump work, there's some service embroidery. I think there's some hardanger in here somewhere. Trish Burr has one of her little kingfishers.
Oh, those are
Oh,
beautiful.
geez, that needle painting she does is just frightening.
Her birds are
Oh
spectacular.
man, what a! And then some straight embroidery. I just gorgeous stuff all the way around, and I've just enjoyed just looking through it, and not even giving a thought to actually doing a project, just looking through it and seeing how it's done and reading the instructions. So that was that's a so I got one for each hobby.
Nice.
Yes, so that worked out great. Yep, that and some days to stitch, and I was good to go.
Yeah, sometimes that's the best gift of all is here's a day you don't have to work and
Right.
there's nothing on the plan and Netflix is available. So
Yep.
that's not bad.
Can't beat it. Can't beat it. So yeah, so that and then this oh and the stitching. Okay. All right, so I started a thing.
A
There's
thing.
that myth type thing that if you do some one thing for 10,000 hours, you can be an expert.
Yes.
And of course, that sounds good on the surface, but if you just do something for 10,000 hours and don't put any effort in, you'll never be an expert.
Yeah.
You actually got to work at it. And
I've washed dishes for 10,000 hours, and I tell you, I'm still terrible at
right.
it.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Mostly because I'm just hoping somebody else will say, "You're terrible at this. I'll do it for you." So
Well,
far, that
good.
hasn't worked out that way, but I'm still hopeful.
Yeah, good luck with that. You just keep hoping.
Yeah,
Because it ain't going to be me, I'll tell you that.
I know.
Yeah.
Dishes keep happening, so.
But I thought as I was stitching that, okay, 10,000 hours, yeah, whatever. I'll be dead before 10,000 hours of stitching get done. But I should write down when I learn things, when I discover things. I should write, just make a list, just a bullet point list of things
Of
as
at
I.
what hour?
No, I because I'm not keeping track of the hours. Come on. That's not happening.
I
But,
don't know. That's something you would do.
no, I'm not going to keep track of the hours because I'm already X number of hours into it and I don't even know how many that is. So, no, I'm not going to. But the what little things do you discover along the way if you're actually working at getting better? And
Okay.
so, okay, so I have this journal book that sits on my stitching table that I use to make notes in about thread colors and shopping lists and all that kind of stuff. It's just a book I have there, so I have paper to write with. And so I started a page called 10,000 hours. And I'm determined. I'm going to write in here and I'm going to make a list of things that I pick up as I go along, as I stitch, what things do I learn that help move that move things forward. Not okay, I
Yes.
made two X's today and not one, or I made a Jessica stitch. Oh boy for me. But things that I learned that are difference makers. And so okay, so I have two. I'm two into it, all right?
All right,
So
good.
I'm doing that reproduction sampler. Okay, so I learned that rule number one with reproduction samplers that these girls did 200 years ago, never assume consistency anywhere. Never
With
assume
canvas
that.
or linen or
No, in the stitching.
oh.
Like if they did five X's here and five X's here and five X's here in the pattern, a repeating pattern, do not assume that the next one's going to be five.
Ah,
Because it might be
because they're
four and it
little
might be
girls.
six. Yeah, right. Right. And I'm sure that they, at some point, just didn't want to do it. They wanted to run outside and play, So, and I learned that lesson because I stitched the border on this thing all the way across. I don't know, 16 inches across. Yeah, 16 inches across. And down each side, a good 6 inches, to build a framework to start to hang stuff off of on the inside. And so I get this done, And then there's a row of yellow silk, just a row of X's, one row all the way across. And I start that, and where it's supposed to start is down 2 stitches from the bottom of the border. Okay? But the chart says down 1 stitch. Well, the chart, and then I look at the picture, and the picture suggests that I'm right, that it's 2 stitches. So I stitch the whole row. But you know how the little voice in the back of your head saying, something's not right.
Yeah. Yeah, something's not right.
Yeah. And so there's a slant on the right corner that is 10 X's. And there's a slant on the left corner that appeared to be 5 stitches, because that's what each of the slants are in this border. Turns out that slant is only 4 stitches. So I was off. I'm just getting this thing going, and I'm already off. Well, I don't know what ramifications that is, being off one row all the way down. So then I tear all that out, that whole row across and then the one side, and fix it.
Right.
So then I write in the book, you know, never assume. So now every time that I'm going to do a section in that sampler, I am looking at the chart and physically counting everything.
I like that idea, actually, ahead of time, if you're doing a section, looking at things to see if, like you said, if repeating patterns actually repeat properly, or
right.
Because it's easier to do that than to sit there and count, okay, that's 5. All right, next, that's 5. That's 5. It's easier to look and say, all right, you know what? All of them are 5. Or, you know, that one isn't 5, and take a highlighter and highlight the one so that when you get to it, you know.
Right.
You know, so you're almost like reading the instructions in advance.
Right. And we're so used to stitching. I mean, this is my first reproduction sampler, authentic reproduction sampler. So I've never done one before. And I'm used to doing charted canvas where
everything's perfect.
Everything's right, spot on. So I learned this. And this thing was deceiving, because there is one place in the border where the girl varies from the standard. There's a section that's always 5 stitches, and she made it 7. And then there's a little stem that comes off of it, and she did it after the 5th one. Well, they put a big red X in the chart and a note down at the bottom that said, don't miss this, because this is not consistent with the rest. So my thinking was, all right, that's the only one in the chart. Wrong. So that lesson was learned. And now I'm doing the alphabet, the all capital letter alphabet. And so this girl has been consistent, but I went through and I looked at every one to make sure they were all the same height, all the same width, all the same separation, 1 stitch separation, the whole bit. And, you know, I sat there and counted, got out a laying tool as a pointer and counted them all out, because now I'm not making that mistake again. So,
So
that was one thing on my 10,000 hours. And then the second thing, was an extension of that, and that is, if you don't have a seam ripper, you're wasting a lot of time tearing out stitches.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So I was glad, and I had bought a seam ripper. I was at Joanne's weeks ago, and I happened to see one, and I thought, you know, I'm going to buy this because it might come in handy someday. And so I bought it, and I have a little gadget box that I just threw it in there, still on the car, didn't even take it out of the bubble pack. Just threw it in there. If I need it someday, I know it's in there. Sure enough, when I had to tear all this out, that was a plus. So,
yeah.
Yep.
Just have to be careful that you hold. So here's the key with seam rippers.
Oh, I was careful. Oh, was I careful.
So you know the point. You want to hold it so that the point is up away from your ground cloth. Because otherwise it will go down into your ground cloth and you will be ripping more than. So having been a seamstress for many years before this, I can tell you how many sleeves I have ripped the entire. You rip not only the sleeve, but because you do the same thing on fabric too. If you happen to catch it and you're not paying attention, and you don't hold that tool the right way, you know, with the point facing upwards away from the stuff that you're ripping, all it takes is, because that super, super sharp point, it takes one, you know, just a millimeter off and you're right into the cloth, and then that's razor sharp and you're ripping right through your fabric, and then you're cutting another sleeve if you happen to have the fabric, or if you don't have the fabric, then you're really unhappy. So it's a great tool But with great tools comes great responsibility, so.
Yep. No, I probably had that in the back of my head because you had probably mentioned it one other time, but the minute I started using that thing, watch where that point goes, because I can see a piece of linen just getting destroyed right here, and I would be very unhappy. So
Yeah.
those are my two things on my first two things on my 10,000 hours list. So we'll see how it grows over the year. Over the
Very good.
years is yes.
All
Yes. Okay, so that's it. All right,
right.
so yep, so Sunday is going to be Loreen Salt. Now, remember we talked about the autumn
Yes.
kaleidoscope. Well, actually, I wet my pants over the autumn kaleidoscope.
That's beautiful.
And so we got Loreen Salt. And so Loreen is our guest on Sunday. And then, as I mentioned, next Wednesday will be a new show, but it won't be us. It'll be a video that we'll put on FlossTube YouTube, and we'll put on the We Talk Fiber website, on our website. It will be a video that Mary McGuire and I made of her 10 favorite threads. And it became her 10 favorite threads for the moment, because she's going to have more. But
Okay, good.
we had great fun doing it. And of course, her projects and getting to see her stitching. And but she talks about showing how each of these threads is used in different instances with different stitches and how they work differently. And it was a lot of fun to do. So you get an hour and 20 minutes of looking at needlepoint projects and listening to Mary talk about different threads and how she uses them and how they're used in these projects, and me just asking dumb guy questions. So
All right.
that was fun. So Sunday, Loreen Salt, then Wednesday will be that video, and then the following Sunday, I forget what we have.
I forget too.
I do too.
Maybe
Anyway,
the
we'll have it.
mystery.
Yeah, we'll have that. So anyway, that's so Wednesday is the Mary video. That's it.
Righty.
We're done.
Happy New Year.
Yes, that too. To you too. Thanks for listening.
Take care.